or if the place really was cold. But her skin puckered with goose flesh, and she had to fight to keep her teeth from chattering. She entered a vast circular ballroom packed with people dancing and drinking beneath a glistening pack of wolves hewn from ice. There had to be at least 30 massive sculptures of running, leaping beasts, their flanks gleaming slickly in the silvery light, jaws open, their slowly melting muzzles dripping occasionally onto the crowd below. Music from an unseen orchestra was barely audible over the gabble of conversation. The elder clock began to chime 10 bells. It had taken her too long to get across that stupid glass bridge. She needed a better view of the room. As she headed for a swooping white stone staircase, she caught sight of two familiar figures in the shadows of a nearby alcove. Kaz and Matthias. They'd made it. And they were in Druskella uniforms. Nina suppressed a shiver. Seeing Matthias in those colors settled a different kind of cold into her bones. What had he thought when he put it on? She let her eyes meet his briefly, but his gaze was unreadable. Still, seeing Kaz beside him gave her some comfort. She wasn't alone, and they were still on schedule. She didn't risk so much as a nod of acknowledgement, but continued up the stairs to the balcony on the second floor where she could get a better look at the flow of the crowd. It was a trick she'd learned in school from Zoya Nazielensky. There were patterns in the way people moved, the way they clustered around power. They thought they were drifting, milling aimlessly. But really, they were being drawn toward people of status. Not surprisingly, there was a large concentration eddying around the Fjerdan Queen and her attendants. Strange, Nina thought, observing their white gowns. In Ravka, white was a servant's color. But that crown wasn't anything to sniff at. Twisting spines of diamonds that looked like branches glowing with new frost. The royals were too well protected to be of use to her. But not far away, she saw another whirl of activity around a group in military dress. If anyone knew Yul Bayur's location on the island, it would be someone highly ranked in Fjerda's military.
Nice view, isn't it?
Nina nearly jumped as a man sidled up beside her. Some spy she made. She hadn't even noticed him approaching. He grinned at her and placed a hand at the small of her back.
You know, there are rooms here set aside for a little fun. And you look like more than a little fun.
His hand slid lower. Nina plunged his heart rate, and he dropped like a stone, conking his head on the banister. He'd wake up in about 10 minutes with a bad headache and possibly a minor concussion.
Is he all right?
Asked a passing couple. Too much to drink, said Nina airily. She slipped quickly down the stairs and into the crowd, moving steadily toward where a group of soldiers garbed in silver and white military dress surrounded a portly man with a luxuriant mustache. If the constellation of medals on his chest was any indication, he had to be a general, or close to it. Should she target him directly? She needed someone of high enough rank to have access to privileged information. Someone drunk enough to make ill-considered decisions, but not so drunk that he couldn't take her where she needed to go. By the ruddy look of the general's cheeks, and the way he was swaying on his feet, he looked like he might be too far gone to do anything but take a nap face down in a potted plant. Nina could feel the minutes ticking down. It was time to make her bid. She nabbed a glass of champagne, then moved carefully around the circle. As a soldier separated from the group, she took a step backward, directly into his path. He slammed into her. He was light enough on his feet that it wasn't much of a hit. But she gave a sharp cry and lurched forward, spilling her champagne. Instantly, several strong arms reached out to brace her fall.
"You clod," said the general. "You nearly knocked her from her feet."
And on the first try, Nina thought to herself. Never mind, I am an excellent spy. The poor soldier's cheeks were bright red.
"Apologies, miss."
"I'm sorry," she said in Kurch, feigning confusion and keeping to the language of the menagerie. "I don't speak Fjerdan."
"Deep apologies," he attempted in Kurch,
then made a valiant attempt at Kalish.
"Much sorry."
"Oh, no, it was my fault entirely,"
Nina said breathlessly.
Algren, stop slaughtering her language and fetch her a fresh glass of champagne.
The soldier bowed and hurried off.
Are you quite all right? Shall I find you a seat?
The general asked in excellent courage.
He just startled me, Nina said with a smile, leaning on the general's arm.
I think it might be best to get you off your feet.
Nina restrained an arch of her brow.
I just bet. But first, I need to find out what you know. And miss the party?
You look pale. Some rest in one of the upper rooms will help.
Saints, he doesn't waste any time, does he?
Before Nina could insist that she was perfectly well, but might like to take a turn on the terrace, a warm voice said,
Really, General Eklund, the best way to garner a woman's goodwill is not to tell her she looks sickly.
The general scowled, his mustache bristling, but then he seemed to snap to attention.
So true, so true, he laughed nervously.
Nina turned, and the floor seemed to drop from beneath her feet.
No,
she thought, her heart stuttering in panic.
It can't be. He drowned. He's supposed to be at the bottom of the ocean.
But if Jarl Broom was dead, he made a very lively corpse.
32. Jesper. 10 bells and half chime. Jesper's clothes were covered in tiny slivers and shavings of steel. His stolen uniform was soaked with sweat. His arms ached, and the headache that had burrowed into his left temple felt like it was setting up permanent residence there. For nearly a half hour, he had been focusing on a single link in the chain that ran from the left end of the winch into one of the slots in the stone wall, using his power to weaken the metal as Wyland sawed away at it with the laundry shears. At first, they'd been cautious, worried they'd snap the link and disable the gate before it was time to raise it. But the steel was stronger than either of them had anticipated, and their progress was frustratingly slow. When the 3/4 chime rang, Jesper's panic took over. Let's just raise the gate, he said with a frustrated growl. We sound black protocol, and then shoot at the winch until it gives up. Wyland flipped his curls from his forehead and spared him a quick glance. Jesper could see the blood on his hands where blisters had formed, and then burst as he hacked away at the link. You really love guns so much? Jesper shrugged. I don't love killing people. Then what is it about them? Jesper refocused on the link. I don't know. The sound? The way the world narrows to just you and the target. I worked with a gunsmith in Novia Zim who knew I was a fabricator. We came up with some crazy stuff. For killing people? You built bombs, Merchling. Spare me your judgment. My name is Wyland, and you're right. I don't have any business criticizing you. Don't start doing that. What? Agreeing with me, said Jesper. Sure path to destruction. I don't like the idea of killing people either. I don't even like chemistry. What do you like? Music, numbers, equations. They're not like words. They don't get mixed up. If only you could talk to girls in equations. There was a long silence. And then, eyes trained on the notch they'd created in the link, Wyland said, Just girls? Jesper restrained a grin. No, not just girls. It really was a shame. They were all probably going to die tonight. Then, the elder clock began to toll 11 bells. His eyes met Wyland's. They were out of time. Jesper leapt to his feet, trying to dust some of the metal bits from his face and shirt. Would the chain hold long enough? Too long? They'd just have to find out. Get in position. Wyland took his spot at the right handle of the winch, and Jesper grabbed the handle on the left. Prepared to hear the sound of certain doom? He asked. You've never heard my father mad. That sense of humor is getting progressively more barrel appropriate. If we survive, I'll teach you to swear. On my count, said Jesper. Let's let the ice court know the dregs have come to call. He counted down from three, and they began to turn the winch, carefully matching each other's pace, eyes on the weakened link. Jesper had expected some thunderous noise, but except for a few creaks and clanks, the machinery was silent. Slowly, the ring wall gate began to rise. 5 inches. 10 inches. Maybe nothing will happen, thought Jesper. Maybe Matthias was lying, or all this stuff about Black Protocol is a fake to keep people from even trying to open the gates. Then, the bells of the Elder Clock rang out, loud and panicked, high and demanding, an escalating tide of echoes climbing one on top of another, booming over the White Island, the ice moat, the wall. The bells of Black Protocol had begun to sound. There was no turning back now. They released the handles of the winch in unison, letting the gate thunder down. But still, the link didn't give. Come on, Jesper said, coaxing the stubborn metal. A better fabricator probably could have made quick work of it. A fabricator on Perim probably could have turned the chain into a set of steak knives and had time for a cup of coffee. But Jesper was neither of those things, and he'd run out of finesse. He grabbed a hold of the chain, hanging from it, using all his weight to try to put pressure on the link. Weiland did the same, and for a moment, they hung, pulling on the chain like a couple of crazed squirrels who hadn't mastered climbing. Any minute now, guards would be storming into the courtyard, and they'd have to leave off this insanity to defend themselves. The gate would still be operational. They'd have failed. Maybe you should try singing at it, Jesper said hopelessly. And then, with a final shiver of protest, the link snapped. Jesper and Weiland fell to the floor as the chain zipped through their hands, one end vanishing through the slot, the other sending the winch handles spinning. We did it, Jesper shouted over the din of the bells, caught somewhere between excitement and terror. I'll cover you. Deal with the winch. Jesper picked up his rifle, braced himself at the slit in the stone wall overlooking the courtyard, and prepared for all hell to break loose.
33. Inej. 10 bells and half chime.
Just how long are we going to be kept waiting? A man in wine-colored velvet asked.
The guards ignored him, but the other guests clustered by the entry with Inej grumbled their frustration.
I came here at great expense, he continued. And it was not so I could spend all my time hovering by the front door.
The guard closest to them recited in a bored monotone. The men at the checkpoint are dealing with other guests. As soon as they're free, you'll be taken back through the ring wall and detained at the checkpoint until your identification can be cleared.
Detained? Said the man in velvet. Like criminals?
Inej had heard variations on the same exchange for the better part of an hour. She glanced out at the courtyard that led to the embassy's ringwall gate. If she was going to make this plan work, she had to be smart, stay calm. Except this wasn't quite the plan, and she definitely didn't feel calm. The certainty and optimism she'd felt only a short while ago had all but evaporated. She waited as the minutes ticked by, eyes scanning the crowd. But when the three-quarters chime sounded, she knew she could wait no longer. She needed to act now.
I've had enough, Inej said loudly. Take us to the checkpoint, or let us go.
The guards manning the checkpoint.
Inej thrust herself to the front of the group and said, We're all sick of that speech. Take us through the gate and get on with it.
Be silent, commanded the guard. Your guests here.
Inej jabbed a finger into his chest. So treat us like guests, she said, mustering her best Nina imitation. I demand to be taken to the gate immediately, you big blonde lump.
The guard grabbed her arm.
You're so desperate to go to the gate? Let's go. You won't be coming back through.
I only...
Then another voice echoed across the rotunda.
Stop! You there! I said stop!
Inej smelled her perfume, lilies rich and creamy, a dense golden smell. She wanted to gag. Helene Van Houden, owner and proprietor of the Menagerie, the house of exotics where the world was yours for a price, was pushing her way through the crowd. Hadn't she said Tanta Helene loved to make an entrance? The guard came to a startled halt as Helene shoved in front of him.
Madam, your girl will be returned to you at night's end. Her papers...
She is not my girl, Helene said, her eyes slitting viciously. Inej stood perfectly still, but not even she could vanish with nowhere to go. That is the Wraith, right hand of Kaz Brekker and one of the most notorious criminals in Ketterdam. The people around them turned to stare. How dare you come here under the auspices of my house, Helene hissed. The house that clothed you and fed you. And where is Ajala? Inej opened her mouth, but panic rose up, tightening her throat, choking the words before they could come out. Her tongue felt useless and numb. Once more she was looking into the eyes of the woman who had beaten her, threatened her, bought her once, and then sold her again and again. Helene grabbed Inej by the shoulders and shook her. Where is my girl? Inej looked down at the fingers digging into her flesh. For a brief second, every horror came back to her, and she truly was a wraith, a ghost taken flight from a body that had given her only pain. No, a body that had given her strength, a body that had carried her over the rooftops of Ketterdam, that had served her in battle, that had brought her up 6 stories in the dark of a soot-stained chimney. Inej seized Helene's wrist and twisted it hard to the right. Helene yelped, her knees buckling as the guard surged forward. I threw your girl in the icy moat, Inej snarled, barely recognizing her own voice. Her other hand seized Helene's throat, squeezing. And she's better off there than with you. Then strong arms were tugging at her, pulling her off the older woman, hauling her back. Inej panted, heart racing. I could have killed her, she thought. I felt her pulse beneath my palm. I should have killed her. Helene got to her feet, whimpering and coughing as onlookers moved to help her. If she's here, then Brekker is as well, she shrieked. At that moment, as if in agreement, the bells of the Black Protocol began to sound, loud and insistent. There was a stunned second of inertia. Then the entire rotunda seemed to explode into action as guards rushed to their posts, and commanders began calling orders. One of the guards, clearly a captain, said something in Fjärden. The only word Inej recognized was prison. He grabbed the silk of her cape and shouted in Kurch, Who is on your team? What is your target? I will not speak, said Inej. You'll sing if we want you to, spat the guard. Helene's laugh was low and rich with pleasure. I'll see you hanged, and Brekker too. The bridge is closed, someone declared. No one else is getting on or off the island tonight. Angry guests turned to anyone who would listen, demanding explanations. The guards dragged Inej through the courtyard, past gaping onlookers and out the ringwall gate as the bells continued to toll. They did not bother with gentleness or diplomacy now. I told you you'd wear my silks again, little lynx, Helene called from the courtyard. The gate was already lowering as the guards sealed it in accordance with Black Protocol. You'll hang in them now. The gate slammed closed, but Inej could swear that she still heard Helene's laughter.
34. Nina. 10 bells and half chime. Nina prayed her panic didn't show. Did Broom recognize her? He looked exactly the same. Long gold hair touched by gray at the temples. The lean jaw marked by a tidy beard. The Druskeller uniform, black and silver. The right sleeve emblazoned with the silver wolf's head. It had been more than a year since she'd seen him. But she would never forget that face, or the resolute blue of his eyes.
The last time she'd found herself in Jarl Brum's company, he'd been strutting for Matthias and his Druskella brethren in the hold of a ship. Matthias? Had he seen Brum, his old mentor, alive and talking to Nina? Was he watching them right now? She resisted the urge to scour the crowd for some sign of him and Kaz. Still, the ship's hold had been dark, and she'd been one of a group of prisoners, filthy and frightened. Now she was clean, perfumed. Her hair was a different color. Her skin was powdered. She was suddenly grateful for her absurd costume. Brum was a man, after all. Hopefully Inej was right, and he would just see a red-headed Kalish with a very low neckline. She curtsied deeply and looked up at him through her lashes.
A pleasure.
His gaze roved over her figure.
It just might be. You're from the House of Exotics, are you not? Kep you nom?
Nom Ifiana, she replied in Kalish.
Was he testing her?
But you can call me anything you like.
I thought Kalish girls with the menagerie wore the red mare cloak.
She plumped her lips into a sulk.
Rosemini stepped on it and tore the hem. I think she did it on purpose.
Cursed girl. Shall we find her and punish her?
Nina forced a giggle.
How would you set about it?
They say the punishment should fit the crime, but I feel it should suit the criminal. Were you my prisoner, I'd make it my business to learn your likes and dislikes. And your fears, of course.
I am fearless, she said with a wink.
Truly? How intriguing. Fjordans value courage greatly. How are you finding our country?
It's a magical place, Nina gushed. If you like ice and more ice.
She steeled herself. If he knew who she was, then she might as well find out now. And if he didn't, well, then she still needed to locate Bo-Yul Bajor. And what a pleasure it would be to trick the legendary Jarl Brum out of the information. She drew closer.
Do you know where I'd truly like to visit?
He matched her conspiratorial tone.
I'd love to know all your secrets.
Ravka.
The Druskel's lip curled.
Ravka? A land of blasphemers and barbarism.
True. But to see a Grisha, can you imagine the thrill?
I assure you, it's hardly a thrill.
You only say that because you wear the sign of the wolf. This means you are a Druskella, yes?
She asked, pretending to struggle with the Fjordan word.
I am their commander.
Nina widened her eyes.
Then you must have bested many Grisha in battle.
There is little honor in a fight with such a creature. I'd rather face 1,000 honest men with swords than one of those deceitful witches with unnatural powers.
And when you arrive with your repeating rifles and your tanks, when you set upon children and helpless villages, should we not use the weapons we possess?
Nina bit down hard on her inner cheek.
There are Grisha in Kerch, are there not?
Brum asked.
So I've heard, but I've never seen one at the menagerie or in the barrel. At least, not that I know of.
Could she risk a mention of Gerda Parem? How would the girl she was pretending to be have such knowledge? She leaned into him, curling her lips into a wicked, slightly guilty smile, and hoping she looked eager for excitement rather than information.
I know they're dreadful, but they do make me shiver. I've heard their powers have no limits.
Well, the Druskella hemmed.
Nina could see he was debating something with himself. Best to stage a strategic retreat. She shrugged.
But perhaps that's not your area of expertise.
She glanced over his shoulder and caught the eye of a young nobleman in pale gray silk.
Would you like to see a Grisha tonight?
Her gaze snapped back to Brum.
All I need is a mirror.
Did Brum have Grisha prisoners stashed somewhere? What she wanted was to hear all about Bo-Yul Bajor and Gerda Parem. But this might be a start, and if she could get Brum alone. She swatted his chest.
You're teasing.
Would your mistress notice if you slipped away?
Well, that's why we're here, no? To slip away.
He offered his arm.
Then shall we?
She smiled and looped her hand over his forearm. He patted it gently.
Good girl.
She wanted to gag. Maybe I'll make you impotent, Nina thought grimly, as he led her out of the ballroom and through a terraced forest of ice sculptures. A wolf with a screaming double eagle in its jaws, a serpent wrapped around a bear.
How primal, she murmured.
Brum chuckled and patted her hand again.
We are a culture of warriors.
Would it be so dreadful to just kill him now? She considered as they strolled. Make it look like a heart attack? Leave him here in the cold? But she could endure Jarl Brum leering down the front of her dress for a little while longer, if it meant keeping Gerda Parem from the world. Besides, if Beoul Bayor was on this saint's forsaken island, Brum was the one to get her to him. The guards at the ballroom doors had let them pass with little more than a raised brow and a smirk. Directly ahead of them, Nina saw a vast silvery tree at the center of a circular courtyard, its boughs spreading over the stones in a sparkling canopy.
The sacred ash,
Nina realized. Then they must be in the middle of the island. The courtyard was surrounded on both sides by arched colonnades. If Matthias and Wyland's drawings had been correct, the building directly beyond it was the treasury. Instead of leading her across the courtyard, Brum turned left onto a path that hugged the side of the colonnade. As he did, Nina glimpsed a group of people in hooded black coats moving toward the tree.
Who are they?
Asked Nina, though she suspected she knew.
Druskella.
Shouldn't you be with them?
This is a ceremony for the young brothers to be welcomed by the old, not for captains and officers.
Did you go through it?
Every Druskella in history has been inducted into the order through the same ceremony, since Jell anointed the first of us.
Nina forced herself not to roll her eyes. Sure, a giant gushing spring chose some guy to hunt innocent people down and murder them. That seems likely.
That's what Hrinkala celebrates, continued Brum. And every year, if there are worthy initiates, the Druskella gather at the sacred ash, where they may once more hear the voice of God.
Jell says you're a fanatic, drunk on your own power. Come back next year.
People forget this is a holy night, Brum muttered. They come to the palace to drink and dance and fornicate.
Nina had to bite her tongue. Given Brum's interest in the dip of her neckline, she doubted his thoughts were particularly holy.
Are those things so very bad? She asked teasingly.
Brum smiled and squeezed her arm.
Not in moderation.
Moderation isn't one of my specialties.
I can see that,
he said.
I like the look of a woman who enjoys herself.
I'd enjoy choking you slowly,
she thought, as she ran her fingers over his arm. Looking at Brum, she knew she didn't just blame him for the things he'd done to her people. It was what he'd done to Matthias as well. He'd taken a brave, miserable boy and fed him on hate. He'd silenced Matthias's conscience with prejudice and the promise of a divine calling that was probably nothing more than the wind moving through the branches of an ancient tree. They reached the far side of the colonnade. With a start, she realized Brum had deliberately led her around the courtyard. Maybe he hadn't wanted to bring a whore through a sacred space. Hypocrite.
Where are we going? She asked.
The treasury.
Are you going to woo me with jewels?
I didn't think girls like you needed wooing. Isn't that the point?
Nina laughed. Well, every girl likes a little attention.
Then that's what you shall have. And the thrill you were seeking, too.
Was it possible Yul Bayor was in the treasury?
Kaz had said he'd be in the most secure place in the ice court. That might mean the palace. But it might just as easily mean the treasury. Why not here? It was another circular structure wrought in glowing white stone. But the treasury had no windows, no whimsical decoration or dragon scales. It looked like a tomb. Instead of ordinary guards, two Druskella stood watch by the heavy door. Suddenly, the full weight of what she was doing hit her. She was alone with one of the deadliest men in Fjerda, A man who would gladly torture and murder her if he knew what she truly was. The plan had been to find someone to give her information on Bo Yulbayor's location, not to get cozy with the highest-ranking Druskella on the White Island. Her eyes scanned the surrounding trees and paths, the hedge maze pushed up against the treasury's east side, hoping to see some shadow move, to know that someone was there with her, and that she wasn't completely on her own. Kaz had sworn he could get her off this island, but Kaz's first plan had gone to pieces. Maybe this one would, too. The soldiers didn't blink as Nina and Brum passed, merely offered a tight salute. Brum pulled a chain from his neck. A strange circular disc hung from it. He slid the disc into a nearly invisible indentation in the door and gave it a turn. Nina eyed the lock warily. This might be beyond even Kaz Brecker's skill. The barrel-vaulted entry was cold and bare, lit by the same harsh light as the Grisha cells in the prison wing. No gaslight, no candles, nothing for squalors or inferni to manipulate. She squinted. Where are we?
The old treasury. The vault was moved years ago. This was converted into a laboratory.
Laboratory? The word formed a cold knot beneath Nina's ribs. Why?
Such an inquisitive little thing.
I'm nearly as tall as you, she thought.
The treasury was already secure and well-positioned on the White Island, so it was a logical choice for such a facility.
The words were innocuous, but that knot of fear tightened, a cold fist now pressing against her chest. She matched Broom's steps down the vaulted hall, past smooth white doors, each with a small glass window set into it.
Here we are, Broom said,
stopping in front of a door that seemed identical to the others. Nina peered through the glass. The cell was just like the ones on the top level of the prison, but the observation panel was on the other side, a large mirror that took up half of the opposite wall. Inside, she saw a young boy in a bedraggled blue kefta pacing restlessly, gabbling to himself, scratching at his arms. His eyes were hollows, his hair lank. He looked just like Nestor before he died. Grisha don't get sick, she thought. But this was a different kind of sickness.
He doesn't look very menacing.
Brum moved up behind her. His breath brushed against her ear when he said,
Oh, believe me, he is.
Nina's skin crawled, but she made herself lean into him slightly.
What is he here for?
The future.
Nina turned and laid her hands on his chest.
Are there more?
He blew out an impatient breath and led her to the next door. A girl lay on her side, her tangled hair covering her face. She was dressed in a dirty shift, and she had bruises all over her arms. Brum gave a sharp rap on a little window, startling Nina.
Look alive, Brum taunted.
But the girl didn't move. Brum's finger hovered over a brass button embedded next to the window.
If you really want a show, I could press this button.
What does it do?
Beautiful things. Miraculous, really.
Nina thought she knew. The button would dose the girl with Jurda Parem somehow. For Nina's entertainment. She tugged Brum away.
It's all right.
I thought you wanted to see a Grisha use her powers.
Oh, I do, but she doesn't look like much fun. Are there more?
Close to 30.
Nina flinched. The Second Army had been nearly obliterated in Ravka's civil war. She couldn't bear to think that there were 30 Grisha here.
And are they all in that state?
He shrugged and steered her down a corridor.
Some are better, some are worse. If I find you a lively one, what will be my reward?
It would be easier to show you,
she purred. Nina had had enough of seeing starving, frightened Grisha. She needed Yulbayor.
Brum must know where he was.
The treasury was nearly deserted. They hadn't seen a single guard inside. If she could get Brum into an empty corridor far enough from the entrance that the guards couldn't hear them, could she torture a hardened Druskella? Could she make him talk?
She thought she just might be able to. She'd seal his nose, put pressure on his larynx. A few minutes gasping for breath might soften him up.
Maybe we could find a quiet corner? Nina suggested.
Brum preened, his chest puffing out.
This way, dear,
he said, using the Kalish word for sweetheart. He led her down a deserted hall, unlocking the door with his circular key.
This should do,
he said with a bow.
A bit of privacy and a bit of charm.
Nina winked and sashayed past him. She'd expected some kind of office or retiring room for the guards. But there was no desk. No cot. The room was completely bare, except for the drain at the center of the floor. She whirled in time to see the cell door slam shut.
No!
She shouted, hands scrabbling over the surface of the door. It had no handle. Brum's face appeared in the window. His expression was smug, his eyes cold.
I may have exaggerated the charm, but there is plenty of privacy, Nina.
She recoiled.
That is your name, isn't it?
He said.
Did you really think I wouldn't recognize you? I remember your stubborn little face from the slaving ship, and we have files on every one of Ravka's active Grisha. I make it my business to know them all, even the ones I hope have been swallowed by the sea.
Nina lifted her hands.
Go ahead,
he said.
Burst my eyes in their sockets. Crush my heart in my chest. That door won't unlock. And in the time it takes you to tamper with my pulse, I'll press this button.
She couldn't see the brass button, but she could imagine his finger hovering over it.
Do you know what it does? You've seen the effects of Jerda Perem. Would you like to feel them, too? It is effective as a powder, but even more so as a gas.
Nina froze.
Smart girl.
His grin lifted the hair on her arms.
I will not beg, she told herself.
But she knew she would. Once the drug was in her system, she wouldn't be able to stop it. She took a breath of clean air. A futile gesture, even childish. But she was determined to hold it as long as she could. Then Brum paused.
No. This vengeance is not mine to take. There is someone else who owes you so much more.
He vanished from the window. And a moment later, Matthias' face filled the glass. He looked back at her, his eyes hard.
How?
Nina whispered, not even sure if they could hear her through the door.
Did you really believe I'd turn against my nation?
Matthias' voice was thick with disgust.
That I'd give up the cause I devoted my life to? I came to Warm Broom as soon as I could.
But you said...
Country before self, Zenik. It's something you've never understood.
Nina pressed a hand to her mouth.
I may never be Druskella again,
he said.
I may live always with the charge of slaver around my neck. But I'll find another way to serve Fjerda. And I'll get to see you dosed with Jerda Perem. I'll get to see you mow down your own kind and beg for the next fix. I'll get to see you betray the people you love, as you asked me to betray my own.
Matthias!
He slammed his fist against the window.
Do not speak my name.
Then he smiled. A smile as cold and unforgiving as the northern sea.
Welcome to the Ice Court, Nina Zenik. Now our debt is paid.
From somewhere outside, the bells of Black Protocol began to ring.
35. Matthias. 11 bells.
She's beautiful, Brum said, in an exaggerated way. You were strong not to be lured by her.
I was lured, though, thought Matthias, and it wasn't just her beauty.
The alarm, Matthias said. Her compatriots, no doubt. But, Matthias, my men will take care of it. The Ice Court is secure.
He glanced back at Nina's cell.
We could press the button right now.
Won't she be a threat?
We've combined the Jerda Parum with a sedative that makes them more biddable, We're still working out the correct ratios, but we'll get there. Besides, by the second dose, the addiction does the work of controlling them. Not the first dose? Depends on the Grisha. How many times have you done this? Brum laughed. I haven't counted, but trust me, she'll be so desperate for more Jurtaparam, she won't dare act against us. It's a remarkable transformation. I think you'll enjoy it. Matthias' stomach clenched. You've kept the scientist alive, then? He's done his best to replicate the process of creating the drug, but it's a complicated thing. Some batches work, others are no better than dust. As long as he can be of service, he lives. Brum placed his hand on Matthias' shoulder, his harsh gaze softening. I can scarcely believe you're really here, alive, standing before me. I thought you were dead. I believe the same of you. When I saw you in that ballroom, I barely recognized you, even in that uniform. You are so changed. I had to let the witch tailor me. Brum's revulsion was obvious. You allowed her to? Somehow, seeing that response in someone else made Matthias ashamed of the way he'd reacted to Nina. It had to be done, he said. I needed her to believe I was committed to her cause. That's all over now, Matthias. You are finally safe among your own kind. Brum frowned. Something is troubling you. Matthias looked into the cell next to Nina's, then another and another, moving down the hall as Brum followed. Some of the captive Grisha were agitated, pacing. Others had their faces pressed up against the glass. Others simply lay on the floor. You can't have known about Parham for more than a month. How long has this facility been here?
I had it built almost 15 years ago with the blessing of the king and his council.
Matthias drew up short. 15 years? Why?
We needed some place to put the Grisha after the trials.
After? When Grisha are found guilty, they're sentenced to death. Brum shrugged.
It is still a death sentence, just one a little longer in the making. We discovered long ago that the Grisha could prove a useful resource.
A resource, Matthias thought. You told me they were to be eradicated, that they were a blight on the natural world.
And they are, when they attempt to masquerade as men. They aren't capable of right thinking, of human morality. They are meant to be controlled.
That's why you wanted Parham? Matthias asked incredulously.
We have tried our own methods for years with limited success.
But you've seen what Jurtaparam can do. What Grisha can do when it's grip.
A gun is not evil, nor is a blade. Jurtaparam ensures obedience. It makes Grisha what they were always meant to be.
A second army? Matthias asked, his voice thick with scorn.
An army is made of soldiers. These creatures were born to be weapons. They were born to serve the soldiers of Jell.
Brum squeezed his shoulder.
Ah, Matthias, how I've missed you. Your faith was always so pure. I'm glad you're reluctant to embrace this measure, but this is our chance to strike a death blow. Do you know why Grisha are so hard to kill? Because they're not of this world. But they are very good at killing each other. They call it like calls to like. Wait until you see all we've achieved. The weapons their fabricators have helped us develop.
Matthias looked back down the hall. Nina Zenik spent a year in Kirch trying to bargain for my freedom. I'm not sure those are the actions of a monster.
Can a viper lie still before it strikes? Can a wild dog lick your hand before it snaps at your neck? A Grisha may be capable of kindness, but that does not change her fundamental nature.
Matthias considered this. He thought of Nina standing terrified in that cell as the door slammed shut. He had longed to see her made captive,
punished as he had been punished. And yet, after everything they'd been through, he was not surprised by the pain he felt at seeing it come to pass. "What is the shoe scientist like?" he asked Brum.
"Stubborn, still grieving his father."
Matthias knew nothing of Yul Bayur's father, but there was a more important question to ask. "Is he secure?"
"The treasury is the safest place on the island."
"You keep him here with the Grisha?"
Brum nodded. "The main vault was converted to a laboratory for him."
"And you're sure it's safe?"
"I have the master key," said Brum, patting the disc hanging from his neck. "And he's guarded night and day. Only a select few even know he's here. It's late, and I need to make sure Black Protocol has been addressed, but if you like, I'll take you to see him tomorrow."
Brum placed his arm around Matthias.
"And tomorrow we'll deal with your return and reinstatement."
"I still stand accused of slave trading."
"We'll get the girl to sign a statement recanting the slaving charges easily enough. Believe me, once she's had her first taste of Jurdaparam, she'll do anything you ask, and more. There will be a hearing, but I swear you will wear Druskella colors again, Matthias."
Druskella colors. Matthias had worn them with such pride, and the things he'd felt for Nina had caused him so much shame. It was still with him. Maybe it always would be. He'd spent too many years full of hate for it to vanish overnight, but now the shame was an echo, and all he felt was regret. For the time he'd wasted, for the pain he'd caused, and yes, even now, for what he was about to do.
He turned to Brum, this man who had become father and mentor to him. When he'd lost his family, it had been Brum who had recruited him for the Druskella.
Matthias had been young, angry, completely unskilled. But he'd given what was left of his broken heart to the cause. A false cause. A lie. When had he seen it? When he'd helped Nina bury her friend? When he'd fought beside her? Or had it been long before? When she'd slept in his arms that first night on the ice? When she'd saved him from the shipwreck? Nina had wronged him, but she'd done it to protect her people. She'd hurt him, but she'd attempted everything in her power to make things right. She'd shown him in a thousand ways that she was honorable and strong and generous and very human, maybe more vividly human than anyone he'd ever known. And if she was, then Grisha weren't inherently evil. They were like anyone else, full of the potential to do great good and also great harm. To ignore that would make Matthias the monster.
"You taught me so much," Matthias said. "You taught me to value honor and strength. You gave me the tools for vengeance when I needed them most."
"And with those tools, we will build a great future, Matthias. Fjerda's time has finally come."
Matthias returned his mentor's embrace.
"I don't know if you're wrong about the Grisha," he said gently. "I just know you're wrong about her."
He held Brum tight, in a hold Matthias had learned in the echoing training rooms of the Druskella stronghold, rooms he would never see again. He held Brum as he struggled briefly and as his body went slack. When Matthias pulled away, Brum had slipped into unconsciousness, but Matthias did not think he imagined the rage that lingered on his mentor's features. He made himself memorize it. It was right that he should remember that look. He was a true traitor at last, and he should carry the burden of it. When they'd entered the great ballroom, Matthias and Kaz had staked out a shadowy nook near the stairs. They'd watched Nina enter in that outrageous gown of shimmering scales, and then Matthias had spotted Brum. The shock of seeing his mentor alive had been followed by the terrible realization that Brum was following Nina.
"Brum knows," he said to Kaz. "We have to help her. Be smart, Helvar. You can save her and get us Yul Bayur, too."
Matthias had nodded and plunged into the crowd. Decency, he'd heard Kaz mutter behind him, like cheap cologne. He'd waylaid Brum by the stairs.
Sir, not no.
Matthias had been forced to step right in front of him.
Sir.
Brum had halted then. His face had shown anger at being stopped, then confusion, and then wondering disbelief.
Matthias, he'd whispered. Please, sir, Matthias had said hurriedly. Just give me a moment to explain. There is a Grisha here tonight intent on assassinating one of your prisoners. If you'll bear with me, I can explain the plot and how it can be stopped.
Brum had signaled to another Druskela to watch Nina, and shepherded Matthias into an alcove beneath the stairs.
Speak, he'd said, and Matthias had told him the truth.
A bare sliver of it. His escape from the shipwreck, his near drowning, Nina's false charge of slavery, his captivity in Hellgate, and then the promise of the pardon. He'd blamed it all on Nina, and said nothing of Kaz or the others. When Brum had asked if Nina was alone in her mission, he'd simply said he didn't know.
She believes I'm waiting to escort her over the secret bridge. I broke away as soon as I could and came to find you.
A part of him was disgusted by how easily the lies came to his lips, but he would not leave Nina at Brum's mercy. He looked at Brum now, mouth slightly open in sleep. One of the things he'd respected most in his mentor was his mercilessness, his willingness to do hard things for the sake of the cause. But Brum had taken pleasure in what he'd done to these Grisha, what he would have gladly done to Nina and Jesper. Maybe the hard things had never been difficult for Brum the way they'd been for Matthias. They had not been a sacred duty performed reluctantly for the sake of Fjerda. They had been a joy. Matthias slipped the master key from around Brum's neck and dragged him into an empty cell, propping him up against the wall in a seated position. Matthias hated to leave him there, chin flopped on his chest, legs sprawled in front of him without dignity. He hated the thought of the shame that would come to him, a warrior betrayed by someone to whom he'd given his trust and affection. He knew that pain well. Matthias pressed his forehead once, briefly, against Brum's. He knew his mentor could not hear him, but he spoke the words anyway.
The life you live, the hate you feel, it's poison. I can drink it no longer.
Matthias locked the cell door and hurried down the passage toward Nina, toward something more.
36. Jesper. 11 bells. Jesper waited by the slit in the wall. A sniper's bolt. The perfect place for a boy like him. What did we just do? He wondered. But his blood was alive. His rifle was at his shoulder. The world made sense again. So where were the guards? Jesper had expected them to rush into the courtyard as soon as he and Weiland triggered Black Protocol. I've got it, Weiland called from behind him. Jesper hated to give up the high ground before they knew what they were up against. But they were short on time, and they needed to get to the roof. All right, let's go. They raced down the stairs. As they were about to burst from the gatehouse archway, six guards came running into the courtyard. Jesper stopped short and held out his arm. Turn back, he said to Weiland, but Weiland was pointing across the courtyard. Look. The guards weren't moving toward the gatehouse. All their attention was focused on a man in olive drab clothing standing by one of the stone slabs. That uniform. A woman walked through the wall, a figure of shimmering mist that solidified beside the stranger. She wore the same olive drab. Tide makers, Weiland said. The shoe. The guards opened fire, and the tide makers vanished, then reappeared behind the soldiers and lifted their arms. The guards screamed and dropped their weapons. A red haze formed around them. The haze grew denser as the guards shrieked, their flesh seeming to shrink against their bones. It's their blood, Jesper said, bile rising in his throat. All saints, The Tide Makers are draining their blood. They were being squeezed dry. The blood formed floating pools in the vague shapes of men, slick shadows that hovered in the air, the wet red of garnets, then splashed the ground at the same time as the guards collapsed. Flaccid skin hanging from their desiccated bodies in grotesque folds. "Back up the stairs," whispered Jesper. "We need to get out of here." But it was too late. The female Tide Maker disappeared. In the next breath, she was on the stairs. She balanced her weight on the banisters with her hands and planted her boots against Wyland's chest, kicking him backward into Jesper. They tumbled onto the black stone of the courtyard. The rifle was jerked from Jesper's arms and tossed aside with a clatter. He tried to stand, and the Tide Maker cuffed him on the back of his head. Then, he was lying next to Wyland as the Tide Makers towered above them. They lifted their hands, and Jesper saw the faintest red haze appear over him. He was going to be drained. He felt his strength start to ebb. He looked to the left, but the rifle was too far away. "Jesper," Wyland gasped. "Metal. Fabricate." And then he started to scream. In a flash, Jesper understood. This was a fight he couldn't win with a gun. There was no time to think, no time to doubt. He ignored the pain tearing over his skin and focused all his attention on the bits of metal clinging to his clothes. The shavings and tiny particles from the severed link in the gate chain. He wasn't a good fabricator, but they didn't expect him to be a fabricator at all. He thrust his hands forward, and the bits of metal flew from his uniform, a gleaming cloud that hung in the air for the briefest second, then shot towards the Tide Makers. The female Tide Makers screamed as the metal burrowed into her flesh, and she tried to turn to mist. The other Tide Maker did the same, features liquefying, but then solidifying once more, his face gray, speckled with bits of metal. Jesper didn't relent. He drove the metal home into their organs, questing deeper. He could feel them attempting to manipulate the particles of metal. If the problem had been a bullet or a blade, they might have succeeded. But the flecks and shavings of steel were too many and too small. The woman clutched her stomach and fell to her knees. The man screamed, coughed up clotted black specks of metal and blood. "Help me," the woman sobbed, her edges blurred, her body vibrating as she struggled to fade to mist. Jesper dropped his hands. He and Wyland scooted away from the writhing bodies of the Tide Makers. Were they dying? Had he just killed two of his kind? Jesper had only wanted to survive. He thought again of the banner on the wall. All those strips of red, blue, and purple. Wyland tugged at his arm. His face looked slightly transparent, the veins too close to the surface. "Jesper, we have to go." Jesper nodded slowly. "Now." Jesper made his feet move, made himself follow Wyland, scale the rope to the roof. He felt woozy and lightheaded. The others were depending on him. He knew that. He had to keep going, but he felt like he'd left some part of himself in the courtyard below. Something he hadn't even known mattered, intangible as mist.
37. Nina. 11 bells and quarter chime. When Matthias opened the door to Nina's cell, she hesitated for the briefest moment. She couldn't help it. As long as she lived, she would never forget Matthias' face at that window. How cruel he'd seemed, or the doubt that had sprung up in her heart. She felt it again, looking at him standing in the doorway. But when he held his hand out to her, she knew they were done with fear. She ran to him, and he swept her up in his arms. He buried his face in her hair. She felt his lips move against her ear when he said, "I never want to see you like this again."
"Do you mean the dress or the cell?"
A laugh shook him.
"Definitely the cell."
Then he cupped her face in his hands.
"Jermola peunet, in il mord janej afatrohim verit."
Nina swallowed hard. She remembered those words,
and what they truly meant. I have been made to protect you. Only in death will I be kept from this oath. It was the vow of the Druskella to Fjerda, and now it was Matthias' promise to her.